and I have nothing but respect and love for the double champ. The only problem we got here is Chael Sonnen, who clearly is just not up to date with what's going on in this modern era. Maybe he's too busy trying to be like us.
Yeah. You know, Roman, in the future, if I want your opinion, I will beat it out of you. Until then, get used to the coach seats and the coupon lifestyle, because the only thing going to be on your waist is nothing but crumbs from junk food, because the belt's not there anymore.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Good Guy, Bad Guy. I'm Daniel Cormier. That's the bad guy, Chael Sonnen. And Chael, I still acknowledge my tribal chief, Roman Reigns, after the greatest WrestleMania of all time. That was a phenomenal weekend of wrestling, Chael. How entertained? Are you not entertained with the new era of professional wrestling?
They did the right thing. I mean, I got to tell you, if you want to back the tape up to 3 years ago, when all of a sudden it gets announced that they're going to make this a two-day event, nobody thought this was going to work. Everybody thought it was going to be too much. Daniel, I'm feeling the blues today. It wasn't enough. I wish there was a third day. I got to give those guys credit, man. As far as the show goes, that was spectacular.
We are going to dig deeper into that later in the show, but we are on the verge of the greatest fight card of all time. UFC 300 goes down next weekend from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Look at this fight card, guys. Alex Pereira fights Jamahal Hill for the light heavyweight championship. Zhang Weili and Yao Shao Nan. Charles Oliveira takes on Arman Tsarukyan. Bo Nichols on the main card again as he takes on Cody Brundage. But when you get down to the prelims, it's littered with more former champions, as Jiří Procházka is on there. Aljamain Sterling is on there. You have Cody Garbrandt on there. Jim Miller fights for his third Centennial card. He fought at 100, 200, now 300. And the boy Money Moicano is on the card. This is a fantastic fight card. And Kayla Harrison fights former champ Holly Holm in her UFC debut. Chael, that is a phenomenal fight card. We've never seen anything like it. That's first and foremost. But this weekend, you and I will be live, face-to-face, from the Toshiba Plaza, where we will discuss the main event and the co-main event. But what we start with today, Chael, is the one that it seems has been on the tip of everybody's tongue, and that's the BMF Championship fight between Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway. We're only 6 days away. These guys are both my buddies, but these are two of the baddest dudes to walk the face of the earth. They fight this weekend for the BMF Championship. Chael, how excited are you for this?
These guys are both my buddies. What is that? Well, these guys are both my buddies. We're going to give an analysis here. One of these guys is going to go a face up, all right? Whether you're friends with them or not, they're about to go in and bludgeon one another. And I got to tell you this, DC, you want to talk about my excitement. Hey, so I fell for a rumor. I fell for an online rumor yesterday. I'm reaching out to Mark Raimondi. I'm calling Brett Okamoto. I finally went to Dana when Ariel told me that he wasn't sure, and it had to do with a rumor that Gaethje had pulled out of the fight. Not true. And I just want to dispel that for anybody else that might have seen that and gone for it. This fight is on. In fact, Max says that he's even finding out that the UFC has something special that they're going to bring to the fans fight week. He's got me very curious. But I got to tell you, one final thing without being too wordy. 2-1 is what Gaethje is favored. He started the line there. That line moved a little bit, and it has gone back to just shy to 2-1. Daniel, personal experience. When I was at 299 in Miami, it was almost like it was just my hi, hello when I would see fellow fighters. But I just kept asking everybody, like I was on repeat, who do you think is going to win the BMF title? Every fighter, and I got to 8, 9, 10 of them, every fighter took Max, even though the fans are taking Gaethje. I'm bringing that to you because it means something.
Well, let me tell you one thing. First and foremost, yes, being my buddy makes a difference. Hey, you being my buddy and being on my show, now you're getting messages from the tribal chief. The tribal chief would never have said anything to you prior to that. So there is a rub that comes with being associated with Daniel Cormier, and I truly believe that that is probably why the fight is so exciting to most people. So my friendship does play a part in that equation. Now, Chael, I'm so excited about this fight because, like I said, these are two of the baddest dudes on the planet. These dudes both love to fight. And when you made the BMF title, you knew that it needed to be fought for between guys that didn't care who was out there across from them. Now, it started as something different, right? It started with Masvidal and Diaz, and those were two guys that were fan favorites that were fun, that would fight anyone, anytime. Now you got championship-level fighters fighting for this belt. This is no knock against Masvidal and Diaz, Chael, but they will take it that way. They'll take it as if I'm insulting them. But before, it was a fun belt. Now it seems almost like an extension of just another championship, a real title, because of the level of fighters that are now competing for this belt. I think it speaks to what the definition was intended to be, where BMF was something different. But now we know that the best fighters in the world are also BMF title contenders. Chael, Max Holloway is back at 155 for his championship opportunity for another time after he fought Dustin Poirier. One thing that I noticed in Anaheim, when he was much thicker. He's a bigger boy today than he was the first time against Poirier. It felt like the first time he was too small. What do you make of Max at 155?
Hey, I like him at 155. And just to remind people of a timeline, because DC, I love that you're pointing this out. There is an overlapping narrative, particularly when we do talk about the odds and the people handicapping this fight, that Max is too small. And just to remind everybody, Max was going to fill in and fight your teammate once upon a time in Khabib Nurmagomedov. And guess what? They canceled the fight because of the weight cut. Max was too big. I understand that was short notice and he was pulling it off, but that was at 155 pounds and it was 5 years ago. If he was too big for the state of New York then, I think that we can all agree he at least is within the weight class now. And yes, I do believe he's thick enough. I do believe he's big enough. And Daniel, one of the great storylines that I am personally most curious about, if Max wins or Gaethje wins, are they going to pursue right there in that moment, standing there in front of the world with Joe Rogan holding that microphone, a defense to add a lineage to the BMF belt, or are they going to attempt to cash that in and declare themselves number one contender? And I only bring that to you because I love the belt. Not to mention, it's been a domestic belt so far, right? I mean, it's almost like the U.S. championship as opposed to the intercontinental. Wait until we start working some of these other countries in. Believe me, the theme of BMF is going to carry over around the world, and I personally, I want to see it defended.
You know, for me, I saw Max when he fought Dustin, and it felt like Dustin's power really started to take an effect on him early. And then he worked his way back into that fight, and then Dustin kind of pulled away from him as the fight ended. But he didn't seem like he carried the power to compete at that weight class. But when you look at these people from Hawaii, these islanders, they're dense, they're strong, they're powerful. And Max looks like he's put on good weight the right way now. He's gotten bigger, and what it says to me, honestly, is that when he was fighting at 145, he had gotten his weight so under control that he was making the weight very easy. And he gave his wife a lot of credit for the nutrition that she's added, the plan that she has put in place for him. But I don't know that he goes back down to 145 as easy with the weight that he's put on this time. He is a real 155-pounder. You know, when you have someone in your life, a nutritionist, a spouse, who takes that responsibility of helping you gain weight or lose weight, and it becomes their job or their purpose, you don't just gain weight now. Now you're gaining good weight that in turn will be harder to take off whenever you want to go back down to the weight that you were prior. But Chael, to answer your question, it's light heavyweight championship, especially for Justin Gaethje. He is the number one contender right now. He wins this belt next weekend. He needs to stand in that octagon and have one word at the tip of his tongue or one name at the tip of his tongue, and that's Islam Makhachev. And in the reset at 145, if that is Max's intention, Ilia Topuria, he should be yelling it from the rooftops if he can beat Justin Gaethje, because with the reset, Volkanovski not being the man anymore, the avenue to be the champion at featherweight is now present for Max Holloway.
You know, DC, John Anik nicknamed Justin Gaethje UFC Gaethje. John Anik went out and said that Justin Gaethje is your favorite fighter's favorite fighter. Now, I only say that because In the world of stardom, if you can win over the media, if you can win over the announcer, Justin Gaethje used to be known as Mr. Entertaining. This is going to be a fun fight. I hear words like savage thrown out there. How about words like winner out there? Have you seen his ranking lately? Have you seen how well he's done? I love the fact that you mentioned that he's the number one contender because I see it the same way. He's not only the number one contender, he's also the reigning BMF champion who, for many people, this is the people's main event of UFC 300, which is the biggest show of all time. We don't just put tough fighters in there. You've got to be good. Justin Gaethje has always been good, but he hasn't always gotten his credit for that. One thing about the BMF that people aren't focused on, partner, don't forget, it's a title. And what that means is five rounds. Justin Gaethje, who's known to put his foot down on that gas pedal, has got to extend. And whether you go back to Eddie Alvarez or even Poirier part one, he uses, and I'm talking about Gaethje now, he uses so much energy, there's not always a little fuel left in the tank. That's something that he's got to learn to extend. I think he knows how to do it. I do think Justin Gaethje can go championship rounds.
Well, I think that he did that. In the last fight, you saw a little bit of a different version of Justin with Dustin Poirier, where he wasn't rushing. He took his time. He was actually the matador, which is not something you really relate to Justin Gaethje, but him and Trevor Whitman, man, they have done a great job of really turning him into a championship-level fighter. And that is why he has managed to stay your favorite fighter by knocking people out, fighting great fights like the Fazeev fight, and they are exciting, but he's not putting himself in so much danger or not taking as many risks. You know, when you look at Justin Gaethje, Chael, I remember when I would fight, and granted, you start making a certain amount of money in your career, and that fight of the night bonus, and those bonuses, they aren't as present on your mind. So when you win them, right, you're excited about it, but you're not thinking about it. When you first start, all you want is a bonus. If you can get that 50 grand, you saw Conor McGregor, when he got that $50,000 bonus, go crazy when he was a young guy in the UFC. Now Conor McGregor doesn't worry about the $50,000 bonus because he's making so much money. Justin Gaethje is at a point where he just expects the $50,000 bonus. This dude has like 12 or 13 bonuses in 13 or 14 fights. He's got more bonuses than he does fights. And even though he has gotten safer, he still is in the types of fights that warrant him getting bonused every single time he steps to the octagon. He's so fun, man. He's so good. And the dude is just, he really is, honestly, a savage and a killer at a level of not many guys in the UFC. I don't know if I've met anyone that has the mindset of Justin Gaethje when he's getting ready to compete inside the octagon, Chael.
And I believe I followed your point there. I believe what my interpretation of what you just said is that from a strategic standpoint as an athlete, for many years, Gaethje had to go into fights thinking of the oohs and the ahs, thinking about being exciting. He would sacrifice good strategy for a big right hand, whereas now he could focus more on winning. Hey, Daniel, I get that point. And to name drop here, but I got to interview Dan Gable one time in my life. And one thing that Coach Gable said, who was known for that effort, for that energy, in many ways, exactly the way that Gaethje's fighting and the reasons he's fighting date back to philosophies of Dan Gable. But Dan Gable told me, and this was back when he wanted to win the Olympics, when it was 3 3-minute rounds, he said, Chael, at some point in my career, I had to learn how to win a wrestling match. It wasn't just about beating the guy up. I had to have more points than him. I'd have more points than him when time ran out. And the only reason I bring that up, I think that's what you're speaking to with Gaethje. He can now focus on winning matches. He can focus on winning world championships and defending and getting to championship rounds. Not just the oohs and the ahs, not just those big right hands and finishes, but winning fights. Am I right, Daniel?
Absolutely. But, Chael, you can't get mad at me for saying that I'm friends with him and then go, I got to interview Dan Gable. I mean, that is about as much of a flex as I got because you know what it means to me? That you got to interview Dan Gable, and I didn't. Like, that's not cool that you want to try to put me over your knee because I said those guys are my friend, and then you want to throw that you interview one of the greatest coaches of all time, the guy that we all kind of hated because we couldn't beat his team when we were in college. But, yes, that is what I'm speaking to, and those guys are going to put on a phenomenal show. Now, Chael, you know, there's another interesting type of storyline going on right now in the lightweight division. You have these guys that since 2018, the top five has pretty much stayed the same. We have seen the same names at the top of that division for a long time. Charles Oliveira, Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje, and before it was Tony Ferguson. Obviously, he's cleared out. But since Michael Chandler got there and Islam Makhachev, But what we have seen recently is the young guys have gotten their opportunity. There always comes a point where the young guys get a shot at the best. It was first Fazeev versus Gaethje. Fazeev fought a fantastic fight. Gaethje ultimately got the win. We got Poirier versus Saint-Denis. Dustin Poirier ends up knocking out Benoit Saint-Denis. But I believe that of all those matchups, the best one is the one that we get this weekend as Armand Sarukian gets his opportunity against Charles Oliveira. First, I ask you, what do you make of that? The idea that the best at the division or the ones that we have come to expect to be in the top five are fighting these young athletes on their way up. And what do you think happens when these two are locked in the octagon this weekend?
Yeah, and it's got to be done, right? I mean, it has to be done where the stars and tomorrow's legends come hand in hand. I mean, look, the Charles Oliveira story does not happen. It does not happen to world championships, to main events, to main card fights on 300 without Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson is the one of those stars at that time that was up in the loft and he threw the rope down so somebody else could climb up on that. Somebody else happened to be Charles Oliveira. Look, I think with Oliveira and Sakurin, and I know how hard these guys are pushing for this to be a number one contenders match, it might just be that. It's a great way to look, but one thing that Islam has said that he wants, and I've only heard Islam ask for one thing ever, which is he would like some parity. He does not want to keep doing rematches. He didn't love the idea of doing Volk the first time, but he was willing to. He definitely didn't want to do it the second time. He always says yes if they ask him. He believes that's what a champion's supposed to do. But Islam has made it clear, I'd like a little bit of fresh blood, and not for nothing, because Sakarian, when he and Islam fought, it wasn't a pay-per-view. It wasn't even a huge featured match. A lot of people don't know that it happened. I've got to remind people that if we look to Armand and Oliveira as a number one contenders match, no matter who comes out on top, Islam is going to be put in the position of the only thing he doesn't want to do, which is taking on somebody that he's already competed with. I think that's where it gives Gaethje and Max a major opportunity. They're going to be up 45 minutes after. They're going to have the final say on the microphone. Look, Gaethje ended the argument with the media, who was arguing with him right after he won the BMF title. He said, I get Islam next. I'm the number one contender. It was a back and forth. And Justin Gaethje said the following sentence: you do not finish Dustin Poirier and not fight for a title. And that media, they went silent, because Gaethje's right, but he's got to understand what he's up against. 45 minutes before he fights, somebody else is likely to be cleared for that position. He needs to trump him and get the blessing of Islam.
Chael, but you know what's weird about this situation? Charles Oliveira is the number one contender, right? Isn't he the number one contender? He was the guy scheduled to fight Makhachev last year in October when Volkanovski had to step up for the second fight. Now you got Dustin Poirier, who just knocked out Benoit Saint-Denis, and Islam's going, I want to fight this guy because I want to fight right now and I need an opportunity to defend my championship. I'm tired of waiting. So now that's another number one contender. Justin Gaethje, when he beat Dustin Poirier, to your point, made the statement, you win a fight like this, you get a title shot. And if he was healthy, he would have been the guy to fight in October. So Armand Sarukian would seem to find himself in a weird situation, because if he does win, how does he jump all these guys? How does he jump all these familiar names to people that will be pining to see Islam versus Gaethje or Poirier or, you know, whoever? You know how he does it? By being possibly the best one. Because for as much as these guys have beaten each other, for as great as Charles Oliveira has looked during his title run, for as great as Dustin looked in the last fight, or for as great as Justin looked in his last fight, Armand Sarukian is the only one that we have seen in there with Makhachev that actually could compete. I know those other guys, Chael, have not fought Islam yet, but they've all fought each other. And if you use any type of, let me look at this fight to see how this fight will play out, or this fight, if you look at it anyway, I'll ask you these two questions. One, would you favor Islam to beat all three of those guys, Gaethje, Poirier, Oliveira? We've already seen them beat Oliveira. Answer that with one question, with one answer. Would you?
Yes.
Now, would you favor him to beat Sarukian? But even if you did, would you be a little more hesitant based on the first fight?
Yes.
Is that enough to make him go past those other guys? because he's going to need something, because the name recognition is so strong, because they've been at the top for so long. What is he going to have to do? Because he knocked out Beneil Dariush horribly down in Austin, and I don't think anyone said, I think this is the number one contender. Even though he's on a massive winning streak and he knocked out Beneil Dariush, who was riding high, nobody said, I think this guy's number one contender. What does he have to do to become the number one contender?
I think he needs to go out there and claim it. I mean, listen, you beat Oliveira, you're going to get some real attention. And not for nothing, I fully understood your point with MMA Mav. Like, Armin's the guy. I mean, he really is incredible. He already gave Islam some troubles. You want to know what would be very clever? If he does get the jump on Oliveira, if he's got all the eyes on him and he's making that demand, I would also get Poirier and Gaethje off the board. I would make an announcement right there that I've already heard word in the back that they're going to go to the trilogy fight. I wish them all well, but I'm going into the world title fight. I'd start matching them all up. I'd get all that momentum going for an hour. I'd get that all over the internets before Gaethje ever had a chance to take that microphone.
You know, for me, that makes all the sense in the world, because guess what? And I'll say this as a guy that knows Islam, that loves Islam. Islam and Sarukian would be probably the lowest selling fight of all those fights, but it would be the absolute toughest. Because Sarukian has a style that lends itself to being competitive against Makhachev. You know how I know Chael? And put Chael up on the screen. You know how I know that he has a style that would be very difficult? Because when he talks about wrestling, Chael, he only says freestyle wrestling. He goes, I know I can compete because my freestyle wrestling is at that level. Because he doesn't just say wrestling. He's very specific about the type of wrestling that will allow for him to compete against anybody in the octagon. That's a dangerous man.
Yeah, no, I fully see it that same way. Eventually, you're going to have to get the nod. I just know that Islam does do a very good job when he decides to come out of his shell. Islam is secretly funny. He's secretly charismatic. Yeah. He's secretly a little bit of a heel. I mean, not for nothing. He will attack guys or give them backhanded compliments where I'll just sit back. I'll be staring at the screen of my phone going, that was brilliant. You know, is this guy writing this stuff himself? Is he really that clever? And as I got to know Khabib a little bit, I realize I'm name dropping over here, but he's secretly really clever and funny too. And by the way, how long are you going to carry this whole thing around about, I teased you that these guys are your buddies? I mean, you know, you've brought that up twice now. Like, are we going to have to keep going back to that? All right, it wasn't meant to be of a dig. I'm just letting you know, we're going to have to call the fights straight down the middle, DC.
You know, Chael, I got out in the writing room. We were on it for a second, but now we move forward. You know, I'm still in WrestleMania mode right now. So in the creative room, we decide that we move past that at this point. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Chael, you know, like I just said, I believe that Sarukian fight is the toughest fight. I don't know that it's the most lucrative fight for Makhachev. I think that he's doing the right thing, right? They're telling me, producer says, who should you want if you're Islam Makhachev? Who you don't want, honestly, is Arman Sarukian. Not because you're afraid of him, but you don't really want it because it doesn't seem to make sense. He needs a little bit more, maybe. He gets the rub from beating Charles Oliveira if he can this weekend, and that helps. But I still don't believe that it generates the revenue for you as a champion, as a Dustin Poirier or a Justin Gaethje. So if I'm Islam, I'm doing exactly what I'm doing now. I am insistent, Chael, that you line me up with Dustin Poirier in July, and then I'm insistent that if Dustin Poirier comes clean, Justin Gaethje wins, you line me up with Justin Gaethje in October in Abu Dhabi. Or if he doesn't win, Gaethje, I'm saying I want to fight Max Holloway. If I'm Islam, I want only names. Because right now, he's won that belt. He's defended that belt twice, but only against the 145-pound champion. He has not defended that belt against one of the bigger names in the weight class. And for him, in terms of his wallet, that's a really good thing. Because more title defenses and the longer down the line that these names are, the better it is for you as a fighter.
Yeah. No, listen, Islam versus the winner for the BMF title. I like the idea of combining those things. I loved it. I mean, and you want to talk WrestleMania, I'll go back to Hogan versus Warrior, the first time that we saw two guys walk to a ring and they both had a belt. You want to put the BMF champion with the world champion? I'm all for it. It's one thing interesting did come out yesterday with Justin Gaethje, where Justin did an interview and he laid out Islam's 2024 schedule, of which is to fight in June and it's to fight in November, one of them being in Las Vegas and one of them being at Madison Square Garden. This is according to Gaethje. I don't know that he's got those dates right. I'm repeating what he said. One thing about it, though, and my biggest takeaway is Gaethje conceded to that schedule. He conceded that I and Max will not be ready by June. And that is why the winner of Arman and Oliveira will take that fight in June. And then if I beat Max, I will be the one up in November. And Gaethje said it as though it was matter of fact. I don't know why he's letting Islam set the table or pick the schedule. I really don't. And of everybody's side that I'm on here, I'm on Islam's, truly. I think that Islam, who has done everything that's ever been asked of him, that went into that fight with Volk and then went and did it again on 8 days' notice, when he only says, I would like some parity, that's it. I would just like to fight guys that I haven't fought before. I think that it matters. And hey, Dana White isn't going to have an easy job here. I mean, you want to talk about real honest? Mm-hmm. Oliveira has made it very clear he does not want to fight Islam. He made it clear before they fought in October, of which a paper cut scrapped that one. And Oliveira and his manager, all within the last 7 days, have both given separate interviews saying if they win the fight, they want Conor McGregor. If you're sitting around waiting for Conor McGregor, it means that you're unemployed. But if you go ask for Conor when somebody else is trying to give you a world title fight, we can't force you into something you don't want to do. And the reason I bring Dana into this, it's very hard prior to the contest for Dana to say this is my number one contenders fight. Not when half of the bracket says I'm not going to do it.
That's so funny. That's so funny. Oliveira knows where the big money fight is, I guess, right? He was the champion when him and Makhachev fought the first time, and maybe it didn't make what he thought it was going to make. Yeah, bro. You know what I love so much? I love 155 because of all these interesting matchups. And there's going to come a time where Gaethje, Poirier, and Chandler and those guys walk away or are gone. And boy, we're going to miss those days when 155 really was, at least to me, the most interesting division in the UFC, because I think that 135 is the best division. And we will get that at some point on our show. But I believe 155 is most interesting because for so long, we have had those same players. People love characters. That's why you show up to season two on a TV show. Because you love falling in love with the character on Yellowstone, right? If they switch characters every single season, you wouldn't be as interested. We have had the same characters now for the last 6 years at 155 pounds, and we've fallen in love with them, and that makes it exciting. Look, man, UFC 300, Chael, that's the third fight from the top of the card. And you got these two dudes fighting for the BMF championship. It is going to be amazing. Now, Chael, you know what time it is. It's time for the fight, boy. It's time to go five rounds with DC and Chael. You ready, Chael? Are you ready to go five rounds?
I'm ready.
Getting to round one.
I am ready.
Kayla Harrison makes her UFC debut next weekend, Chael. My question to you is, who looks better in the weight class, Aljamain Sterling or Kayla Harrison, as they're both switching it up?
Look, I do think that it's very interesting in terms of drama and storyline. We have Kayla Harrison and making weight. Now, this is a judoko who came from a wrestling background, or much like our background, Daniel, where she's very used to weigh-ins. She does not have a history of missing weight, but she was 145 pounds for the last time in her life when she was a 17-year-old junior in high school. She's going to pass 145 and come all the way down to 35 for the first time. I'm keeping my eye on that. I am worried about how she's going to feel.
You know, she has more resources now to make the weight than she's ever had in her life. And I'm telling you, as a guy that at the Olympics didn't wrestle after making the weight, making 205 6 pounds lighter was much more different. It was different for me and easier because of the resources at my knowledge. But for me, it's Kayla Harrison. Have you seen her? She looks like a Greek goddess. I saw her at UFC 299 just looking jacked, if only for physical. In appearance, I've got to say Kayla Harris.
Perfect job on the time there, partner. Now, I got to ask you something, and I feel like I'm going to ask you a really hard question, which is simply, what fight are you most looking forward to on the prelim card?
Oh, on the prelim card. See, you switched it up on me. I thought you were going to say on the card. I guess I got to say, no lie, Jiří Procházka versus Alexander Rakic. Because we have seen Jiří Procházka become the UFC champion before. But Alexander Rakic is one of those guys that for so long people have expected him to be in contention for a championship. A win in this fight would put him in line to fight for the belt. So that's the one that I'm excited about. And Laura Senko told me the other day that she is certain Rakic is going to be the UFC champion. Certain.
Look, when Rakic was going to come back, he had led us all to believe he was coming back at heavyweight. When I saw him in person, oh, you want to talk about somebody that was built. I mean, this guy looked like he was carved out of stone. He was 242 pounds. I'm surprised he's pulling down. I want to slip my answer in real quick. I like the Garbrandt-Figueiredo fight for one reason. They're the ones that set it up. Garbrandt called him out. Figueiredo accepted the challenge. They got something between them. I hope we figure it out on fight week, but this one's personal.
The old curtain jerker, Chael. Cody Garbrandt and the curtain jerker. Let's tell you how good the fight card is. Round three, Chael. Here we go. Who's got most to gain this weekend? I done took all the time in the last round. But who's got most to gain this weekend at UFC 300?
Well, one that people aren't necessarily looking at, and that has to do with Aljo. I mean, one thing that history says is very good is when a former champion that had success in a division can come and get a fresh coat of paint. It is one of the best things you can do, and at some point in your career, you've got to do it. Look, if you go from champion and then you start working down to competitor, eventually you work your way down to prelim, fight pass, and then you all of a sudden you're out of the business. Unless you change weight classes. All of a sudden, you got this brand new look. I don't look at Aljo as a guy that lost his last fight. I look at him as a guy that's a former champion that's undefeated at 145.
You don't want to become the old jobber, Chael, the enhancement talent as your career starts to wind down. No, anytime you're fighting for a championship, that's the person with the most to gain. For me, it's Jamal Hill. Jamal Hill never lost that championship. Jamal Hill is back now fighting for the belt. And he's fighting against a guy that's a double champion that everybody feel walks on water. Jamal Hill wins his fight. His star will shine brighter than it ever has.
All right, enough of the nice guy. Let's get to the bad guy because there's the other side of this, and that's who comes up with the silver medal. So let me ask you this, DC. Whose stock takes the biggest dip with a loss?
Charles Oliveira. Charles Oliveira has the most to lose at UFC 300, Chael. He was, like I said, the number one contender. He is now fighting a guy that is on his way up. It's the same situation as Dustin Poirier and Benoit Saint-Denis. When you are a guy that had lived at the top of the division, a guy that was the champion, that has fought the biggest fights in the organization, when you are in the position where you got to give the kid a chance, you cannot lose. And if you do, you're really going to suffer for it.
Look, and things are going to go from bad to worse for Justin Gaethje if he gets beat. We all know in this business that size matters. You can't lose to a guy coming up from a different weight class. Just can't happen. And Justin Gaethje, talk about numbers don't lie. When you start to be 35 years old, when you start to be plus, very unlikely that you're going to work your way back into a title shot. I think he's got the most to risk, but that also comes with some great gain.
It comes with some great gains. Now, Chael, this is probably my favorite one in the fight. Who on this card, littered with Hall of Famers, is the most surefire Hall of Famer on UFC 300?
Well, the first thing you're going to have to look at is we're going to have to figure out who here is friends with Daniel Cormier, because media matters, right? If you got this good relationship with Daniel, or maybe you golfed with him sometime, I'm kidding. It doesn't have a darn thing to do with it. You want to know who I think is going to be a lock? Daniel, I think this might surprise you. Holly Holm. And while I think I just surprised you, you're not going to disagree with me. You might have somebody else you want to offer, but Holly Holm, I feel like she could go in right now. Sometimes I don't know why she is still fighting. She is she had the biggest upset in UFC history. She became the world champion. She was a top five draw, which for women that were brand new, you know what an achievement that is? Not to mention what she did, world titles in boxing and kickboxing. Man, that stuff all matters. And Holly is primed for an upset this weekend. I'll tell you that too.
Yeah, absolutely, Holly Holm, which is a great call. But Alex Pereira, I mean, there is no double champion in the UFC that is not in the Hall of Fame. Even our boy Randy Couture, who does not have the best relationship with the company, is in the Hall of Fame. You win two belts, you go into the Hall of Fame. That is just the way it is. So, yeah, Alex Pereira is the most surefire guy that gets into the Hall of Fame. Now, Chael, we did our work. And the one thing we insisted was that after I do my work, I'm not showing up if you don't give me a moment to talk WrestleMania. I put my foot down. We said, we'll do our work. But then you give us a couple minutes to talk about what was the greatest WrestleMania of all time. But before we start, Chael, you had a bit of an unpopular opinion last night on X, formerly known as Twitter. I just learned that, Chael. I just learned how to say that, X, formerly known as Twitter. You said there is no explanation or justification for how awful this match is. There is nothing thus far that resembles a fight, Chael. This was one of the best main events we've ever seen at WrestleMania, and you crap on it?
Look, I had a few problems with it. First off, I mean, these guys were tired. They had good reason to be, but that's what it looked like. I like the matches that looks like a fight. It has to look like a struggle. That looked like an entertainment where two guys were cooperating. Not for nothing. We were 14 minutes in when I sent out that former Twitter, now known as X. 14 minutes into a world title match main event, neither guy has a bead of sweat. By the way, they weren't even attacking each other. One thing that happens anytime you have a nose rules match, if you ever have a nose rules match, you're going into the crowd. You're going to go into the crowd because there's no count out by the referee, and that's the ultimate reminder that we, in fact, have no rules, and we're going to follow that script. So they stay outside, but the whole thing was slapstick. They got out of the ring by Roman jumping through and running his shoulder to the corner post. I've been in a lot of fights with a lot of men. Ain't nobody throwing me into a stack of chairs or putting me on a table. I'll tell you that right now, DC. They're not even wrestling with each other. Then when they finally work their way back to the ring, and what we know by being fans that we got another 45 minutes to go, and they keep covering each other for the 1-2, for the 1-2, for the 1-2. We all know you're not going to get the 1-2-3 8 minutes in to a WrestleMania that's your main event when you got a pay-per-view window that's going all the way until 11 o'clock Eastern. It was ridiculous, and it looked like they were tired. And by the way, I don't love the celebration either. I mean, that reminded me of the curtain call where Triple H and X-Pac and all the boys, Nash and Diesel, got in a whole bunch of trouble. What are you doing a curtain call, and you're bringing guys in from the back, and you're thanking them for writing your name down in the script? The fans did this, period. The fans did this by turning on Rock and putting you over. Thank us fans. Don't go thank Triple H, you little kiss ass.
Chael, I mean, I didn't love the celebration, the curtain call. Hey, these guys all need, these guys, look, I understand that we do release our reality to watch it, right? We all know now, ever since the Iron Sheik and Hacksaw Jim Duggan got stopped on the side of the road back in the mid-80s, drinking and driving, and we realized that it ain't real. Don't bring the guys that are supposed to be hell-bent on taking what you just won to the ring to celebrate with you. That's the only issue I had with the main event. Everything else to me was perfect. Now, I will tell you this. I do believe, and I like Cody. Cody's a great guy. Him and I have a great relationship. And there's another name dropping. We talk. Me and Cody talk, right? I don't know that he's going to be better as the champion opposed to chasing. Because everybody loves an underdog, Chael. Everybody loves someone that's in pursuit of something, especially something that they're constantly chasing that eluded their father, who is so beloved. But now that he's the champion, I don't know that he will receive the type of love that he's been receiving on the way in there. Now, wrestling fans, to me, they all think they're so smart now that they understand this business when they don't. We don't understand this business like we think we do. But what they do is this. They almost will somebody into a position. They make you listen. Like you just said, Daniel Bryan became the champion. They loved him. By the end of his title reign, they were starting to turn on him. Seth Rollins was chasing. He became the world champion. They turned on him. I think they're going to do the same thing with Cody Rhodes. Because, Chael, for as much as Roman Reigns wasn't there, every time he showed up, it was a big deal. When Brock Lesnar would show up, it was a big deal. You can't have normal anymore because normal means that that person's always present and it don't feel special when they're always present. You need to have a guy that goes away a little bit and comes back to make it feel special.
Good guy, bad guy. I want us to call a show. I want us to do a live event from WrestleMania next year. That can be a goal of you and I's, okay? If we work towards that, and I'm being very sincere on that, I love what they did with The Undertaker. You know, if I'm to be real fair and tell both sides of the coin, there's not many people that are going to be able to give The Rock a bump. He's too big of a star. He's got a seat on the board, not a scripted seat at the head of the table. He's on the board. Taker's the guy that could do it. Hogan would have been wrong. Goldberg would have been wrong. Even Stone Cold would have been wrong. It was right to bring the Taker in. I've got to give them credit. Now, when you talk about the heel turn by Cody, it's already began and he doesn't even know it. I got to go back to this because this was real and it was unscripted. But for him to thank those decisions and that moment, to thank Bruce Pritchard and Paul Levesque, two multimillionaires, to bring them out in their tailored, wonderful suits and give them a moment in the ring, it was wrong. They're not the ones that got him there. It was the fans. The fans 100% went to social media and they got not only behind him, but to get behind him, you had to pull down The Rock. The biggest star in the building last night was The Rock, and he went out there and did a bump because even he respected the word of the fans, and Cody did not thank the fans. He went and thanked a bunch of rich elites. It was a huge mistake. It's going to backfire on him as quickly as tonight.
That's funny, Chael. Look, man, I thought it was a great fight. I mean, I popped when I saw Cena, when I saw The Undertaker. I screamed so loud when I saw those guys. I love it, man. I can really suspend my reality when I'm watching. I love it. The Gunther match with Sami Zayn, very surprising. That match, the championships were changing hands all weekend, and it was great, man. I had such a great time, and you're right, Chael. Next year, good guy, bad guy, at WrestleMania, and Chael. When you go with ESPN, they give you these little credential things. It hangs on your shirt, right? Goes all the way down. We gave you one at the NCAA tournament. It gets you anywhere. I mean, you go down to catering. When you go to WrestleMania with ESPN, you are the man. You might as well put on one of Triple H's custom suits and go sit in the gorilla position if you want because ESPN is that strong. So at WrestleMania, a whole bunch of championships change hands. But Chael, there was one championship earned this weekend by my beautiful daughter, Marquita Cormier. Kiki won the California Floor State Championship. Now, guys, I understand in gymnastics, it's an all-around, it's the beam, it's the bars, it's the floor. She won the floor exercise with just the most phenomenal performance, Chael. And then I told her, I said, baby, when I saw you do that move with your shoulders, she was like, I did not do that, Dad. I said, when you did this one, I said, oh, she got it today. It's her best event. It's the way she's such a good dancer. She does great flips. She does it all, man. And she honestly would have been much higher in the overall if she didn't fall on the beam. But she still got a 9, even though she fell off the beam. She did the perfect routine. That's my perfect daughter right there, Marquita. She's 12 years old, bro. She works so hard. I am so proud of Marquita. I love you so much, my sweet Kiki. Dad was proud. I almost started crying yesterday, bro, watching my daughter accomplish. Because, Chael, for all that we do in our lives, it never matches to what your children do. And for me right now, Chael, I am a proud father because in a singular year, I've had 2 kids that have won some form of a state title. Good for the Cormier kids.
If I may just add to that, I actually follow gymnastics myself. I got 2 aspiring gymnasts. But we had a gal on the United States Olympic team, and prior to that, she was at UCLA, and prior to that, she was 4th in the state of California. That is how difficult California is. That is the premier state for gymnastics, and the fact that this young lady is now the queen, I mean, I've got to tell you, that is a true accomplishment. Congratulations, partner. That's a family effort and a lot of work.
Chael, I would give away every championship I ever won if my children could just continue to thrive, not only in athletics, but also in their academics. And I'm sure you would say the same thing. Thank you so much, guys, again, for joining Chael and I. We love doing this show. Hey, this Chael, you're my favorite partner I've ever had in these ESPN shows. You're just amazing, man. You're mine for it. And a hell of a promo you cut on the Tribal Chief, but I still acknowledge my Tribal Chief. Get us wherever you get your podcast every Monday and every Thursday. And this week, guys, join us at Toshiba Plaza for a live episode of Good Guy, Bad Guy as Chael and I go back and forth. Hey, and we can actually go at each other whenever we're sitting right next to each other and I can really put the bad guy in his place. Guys, I'm Daniel Cormier. That's Chael Sonnen. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for the love. And we're going to catch y'all guys on the next one. Until next time, peace.